And I'm going to walk through some of the specifics on what we're calling for and give my colleagues a chance to do the same. But I want to at first just give kind of an overview of the massive problem that our country is facing at this point. Even before coronavirus, we had 20 million Americans without health insurance. As we all know, with the fallout from the virus, that number is going to grow enormously. We've seen in the last 3 weeks, 3 to 4 weeks, about 22 million Americans file for unemployment, 5 million literally this week. We don't know how much larger that number will grow, but we do know if you take the 27 million Americans who didn't have health insurance, if you recognize that as people get unemployed and go on unemployment, many people lose their health insurance because of that connection, unique American connection between employment and healthcare coverage. So those numbers at 27 million have the possibility to double. We're looking at literally tens of millions of additional Americans. We could get up to 50 million plus without health insurance. So today, Senate Democrats have sent a letter to our top congressional leaders calling for three specific proposals to expand and strengthen health care during the pandemic. First, we need to strengthen Medicaid. And obviously the way we've done this traditionally, and I say this, Gene and I being former governors, is to increase the FMAP share. We think that needs to be done. That, a little bit of that was done in the second coronavirus package. We think we need to make an additional increase there. And then we also need to build in something that Senator Jones and I have been championing, but particularly Doug has been championing, the so-called SAME Act, that would make sure that those states that have not done Medicaid expansion, if they choose to do Medicaid expansion now, wouldn't be penalized in terms of share of federal match. And Doug Jones has been really the leader on this, and we'll speak to that in much more detail. Second, Congress and the administration need to immediately work together to reopen the ACA marketplace and provide premium assistance to enrollees. I know the president's been reluctant to do this, but as he's indicated that, you know, folks with COVID-related illnesses are not going to be hit financially, we think the best way to do that is to reopen the ACA, and we hope they will. We will do that. And one of the things that we should do as well is Congress can provide additional assistance through premium tax credits that helps people kind of on the bubble make sure they get the financial support to be able to qualify and take advantage of the ADA marketplace. And third, and this was something that we tried to deal with in the last CARES package, but were unsuccessful. But I think as we've seen so many millions of Americans be laid off, one way that we can mitigate people losing their health insurance if they get it through their employer is through continuing employer-sponsored coverage through the COBRA program. Without the employer contributions, COBRA's not cheap, and we should make sure, again, that we provide premium assistance to, again, let folks keep their insurance during these tough times. Now, more than three dozen of our Democratic colleagues sent this letter to our congressional leadership. We're ready to work with the administration, our Republican colleagues. You know, this should not be a partisan issue. I think about I was on the call with the president yesterday, and the number of senators, Democrat and Republican, who are both talking about testing but also talking about the lack of health care coverage, I hope would build the kind of bipartisan support that we need to get these proposals adopted in the next coronavirus package. So with that, let me go ahead and hand off first to good friend and former governor as well, Jean Jean, and then she'll turn it over to Doug, and then we'll be happy to take your questions. Jean?
Well, thanks, Mark, and thank you for pulling together this call, and it's nice to be on with both you and Doug as we think about how we help the millions of Americans who are really suffering during this crisis. This is the worst crisis in my lifetime, and Mark spoke very eloquently to the challenges that people are facing. There is an echo on the line. If somebody can try and fix that, that would be great. Um, let me just say that millions of Americans are being laid off every week, as we have seen, and these people are our neighbors, they're family members, they're friends, and that's why it's so important that any upcoming legislation needs to help respond to this pandemic through strong measures to ensure that Americans can continue to access health care coverage. Senator Warner spoke to the Medicaid expansion piece. Thankfully, New Hampshire had already expanded Medicaid. We have over 51,000 Granite Staters who now have health coverage through the ACA's Medicaid expansion. But unfortunately, as more and more people become unemployed and are affected by this pandemic, we're going to see more and more people qualify for Medicaid. Congress needs to provide more help to states so that they can continue to provide vital coverage available through Medicaid and that they can expand that coverage where applicable. We also need to have the administration set up a special enrollment period for the Affordable Care Act. The administration's plan is to use the hospital dollars, the hospital fund, that $100 billion that we passed in the CARES relief package, to cover care for coronavirus patients. But estimates suggest that that's going to cost $17 to $40 billion of those funds. It would be a much better use of dollars to just open up the Affordable Care Act to a special enrollment period to let people enroll for health insurance and to be able to continue to use that fund to help hospitals, to help community health centers, to help nursing homes, those people who are on the front lines of dealing with this coronavirus pandemic. Finally, we need to help those Americans who have lost their jobs, have been furloughed, laid off, but who would like to continue their health care coverage under their employer because they're hoping to go back to work for that employer. And so we need to help those people who are newly unemployed afford their COBRA premiums through premium assistance. We've done that before. We did it during the Great Recession, and there's no reason why we can't do it again with millions of Americans losing their jobs every week. So these are ideas that people have come together around in the past. They have had some bipartisan support in the past. We need to work together to ensure that we do everything possible to help those people who need health care coverage during this difficult time get that access to the health care they need. Now let me turn it over to Senator Jones.
Doug,
are you there?
Oh, yeah, I'm here. Sorry. These technological things still get to me, and there is a mute button that I had to push to unmute. So thank you. Thanks, Gene, for that, and thanks, Mark, for organizing this. I really appreciate it. This is so incredibly important, as my colleagues have just said, and I want to kind of focus a little bit on the aspect that I am most interested in, and I've been preaching about this for a long time, and that's expansion to Medicaid, because we've got about 14 or 15 states now that have not expanded Medicaid, including Alabama. That I won't go over how much that's cost our states in the past, but what I do think has happened now is this pandemic has really put a magnifying glass on the healthcare disparities that we have in this country, and particularly in my state and the many other southern states. And these folks that would benefit from Medicaid expansion are folks that under very strict guidelines in a state like Alabama are not qualified for Medicaid under the current regulations, but are working people and work very hard, but they just either their employers don't offer good health plans or they just don't make enough money to buy anything except the junk plans that we've seen out there. And so they're just not getting the coverage. Now, while I appreciate the administration's efforts to use the CARES Act to cover uninsured folks for COVID-related illnesses, that it does not go far enough, and it's just kind of robbing Peter to pay Paul, because that money was also supposed to be there for these hospitals that for their lost revenue. All of these hospitals in Alabama today are in a position to where they can't They can't make ends meet. They're losing money because they're not doing elective procedures. And the CARES Act was designed to try to help them with all of that. So if we can expand Medicaid, if we can give states the incentives to expand Medicaid, we would be in a position to give health care to people while also putting the federal dollars back into these states. Candidly, this is right now, many states could not do this unless the federal government gives them some expansion tools because they're losing revenue as well. In Alabama alone, if we could expand Medicaid and get that 100% match for a period of time during this pandemic, we'd have, I've seen numbers of anywhere from 326,000 people in Alabama up to 377,000 people that would be eligible for good health care. It just makes sense to do it. It gets the federal dollars into our state in a way that helps people directly, while we can then help and do those things necessary for hospitals to help them with the incredible amount of lost revenue. The other thing that I think, finally, that you heard from Senator Warner and Senator Shaheen is that as we sit here today in mid-April, we now know that this crisis is going to continue for some time, maybe and hopefully not at the intensity that we've seen in the last few weeks. But opening America up, opening our individual states up, is going to be a gradual process. It is going to be one where businesses will fail. We know that. We're trying to do everything we can to keep them operating. But businesses will fail, and that means more people will be unemployed. And so as we open the economy, it is going, if we do it in a good, strategic, right way, based on science and the health data, then it is we're going to need benefits in our healthcare system for some time to come. And it's not just for dealing with COVID. As our economy gets opening back up gradually, the healthcare system is going to continue to be overloaded. Not from the need for ventilators and COVID patients that are taking up bed space, but for the routine care that people have been waiting to take. Not just the electives, but the routine care. And we've got mental health issues that we're going to have to deal with for some time to come. Medicaid is the most efficient tool that we've got to do that, to get those federal dollars where they're needed to the healthcare professionals, but also to provide that healthcare for individuals. So I'm hoping that as the next package goes, we will look seriously and people will see the need to do this, that we can give these states the ability to expand Medicaid for a period of time and continue on the program if they so elect to do that. With that, I will conclude and turn it back over to Mark to moderate. I thank everybody for being part of this group today. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Doug and Gene. And Rachel, why don't we go ahead and see if we can get a few questions from our friends in the press.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead. If you could identify yourself.
Sure. This is Sarah Hansard with Bloomberg Law. Could you be a little more specific on what you're proposing on Medicaid? Some specifics, like how long would you get the 100% match?
Those are issues that we're still we want to work through with our Democratic colleagues and Republican colleagues. I'm not going to stake out. Those are the kind of conversations that are part of a negotiation. But through the duration of the emergency, and that's one of the challenges we have right now is just because a state may be starting a process to reopening, I think as Doug pointed out, the economic overhang of this crisis is going to be substantially longer than when a state has technically started the path to reopen. So,
do you know how many states have not expanded Medicaid? Is it 14? Does anybody know?
I think that's the right number. A couple of states, it was 16 going into this year, and I think a couple of states have either expanded now or in the process. So I think the correct number is 14.
We can get
that for you for sure.
Okay, thanks.
Hi, this is Claire.
This is specifically for Senator Warner. We're wondering just your thoughts on being in the task force for Open Up America and what those steps might look like going forward.
Well, I'm happy the president asked me, but I also indicated I only wanted to participate in this group if we were going to make decisions on reopening based upon science, data-driven, bipartisan. I'm glad to see that at least the first step the president took was to actually refer this back to the governor, who, and Gene and I being former governors, I think understand we have responsibility for the well-being of our respective citizens. And while there may be differences, based on state conditions, you've got to show, you've got to show a decline in cases, and I'm not sure yet, when that clock starts ticking. I mean, are we showing decline for 2 weeks from today, from next week? I know certain states, I think Florida and Texas, were talking about acting fairly quickly. I'm just not sure how you do that when we don't have the availability of testing that would ensure, our people are going to stay safe. I can only say, maybe Gene Wayne may want to comment this as a former governor as well. I wouldn't put my people back potentially into harm's way and lose their confidence if I didn't have some way of monitoring the health of folks as they return, and that goes to much more ubiquitous testing.
Well, and just to add to that, Mark, we have some good survey data in New Hampshire that suggests that people are not going to go back out if they don't feel safe. That's more of a concern for the people who were talked to than their economic and financial condition. So people need to feel like they're going to be safe if they go out to a restaurant or to a baseball game or go back to work. And that's one of the challenges and why we need testing and why it needs to be ubiquitous.
Hi, I have a question. This is Claire Foran with CNN. One question for Senator Warner. This letter that you're sending, you're saying that you'd like to see these provisions in upcoming legislation regarding the coronavirus crisis. Are you envisioning this as part of like a CARES 2, like a broader sweeping fourth stimulus package, or are you hoping that maybe it could be included in like an interim negotiated package to increase funding for the small business relief program? And then one question for Senator Jones. Do you feel like Democrats Democratic leadership are making the right call by trying to do, more beyond just increasing funding for the small business program in this interim kind of negotiation? Or do you think that just a clean funding increase would be the way to go?
Well, let me say, a great deal of kudos to Gene Shaheen and Ben Cardin, Marco Rubio, and others on, putting together this PPP program. It's been, obviously very successful. But when you look at this, we're talking about almost 1.7 million grants approved. But we've got more than 11 million businesses under 500 people in America, and that doesn't count all the NGOs. So I think what we want to make sure is that, I've been on calls with business leaders across rural Virginia today, and they're deeply concerned that the beauty shop, the barber, the beauty salon, the barber shop, people that we used to talk about in this program weren't getting enough review, as well as not nonprofits not getting review because they may not have had a traditional banking relationship. So I do think it's, I think there's Republican support for this as well, to slightly amend the PPP program, to make sure that all the universities were taken care of. I also have heard from hospitals and local government.
Did you finish, Mark?
We lost you, Mark.
All right, maybe he'll come back, and I'll just take up the second part of your question. The question was about trying to deal with a little bit broader package than just SBA. Look, everyone understands, and they knew going in, I think most people recognize that we were going to probably... Do you want to finish, Mark?
Doug, I got you.
Yeah, I just want to finish. It's like me and my staff ultimate revenge. Like every time I start talking, the call comes up and says, you've been muted. So, Rachel, I know you're on this call. I have to explain this later. But I was just going to finish by quickly saying, you know, we want, I think there are appropriate amendments to PPP. I think we also need this health and state and local government. But I think most of the proposals we're talking about here would be more in a next CARES package, not in the interim package.
Okay, thank you.
With regard to the current discussions ongoing about small businesses and other things, I think everybody understood that when we passed the last package, that we were going to likely have to put more money in for small businesses, perhaps the unemployment, but also for healthcare and state and local government. We've, you know, both healthcare folks and state and local governments have been hemorrhaging money. I think it's more appropriate to not try to pick winners and losers in this in the immediate. Those three buckets in particular are really vital to keeping America going right now. And so we are going to, I think, everyone wants to put the money in. With small business in particular, though, we've had such a difficult time with the Small Business Administration trying to get this up and running and doing it in an efficient way. The guidelines that have come out have been kind of moving targets a little bit. People have been excluded when they shouldn't have been excluded, and I think against what the will of Congress was. So I think before you just literally write a check and put more money into an existing program, you got to do some things to make sure that that program is running the way Congress intended and running efficiently. And when you do that, you can also look at the fact that cities and counties in particular are losing money and revenue that was particularly prohibited from them from using in the $150 billion elsewhere. But our cities and counties across this country are not getting any revenue, but they're still providing fire protection, police protection, sanitation, all of those essential services. But yet we're giving lost revenue money to businesses, hospitals across the board. They deserve to be propped up a little bit too. I think everybody recognizes this, so it just makes sense to do it as one package because everybody is in need, and we can get this done. I think great progress is being made to do that, and I'm hopeful it'll get done in the next week or so.
Thank you.
I have a question. Glenn Wilson, New American Journal. Hello.
Go ahead.
Okay. Doug and everybody else on the panel, you probably saw the story that attorney generals around the country are appealing to the Treasury Department to do something about the creditors taking people's stimulus money. I'm wondering if there's anything the Senate can do to address that, since apparently the CARES Act did not contain that provision.
Well, I think Glenn will certainly look at that. I mean, as I said earlier, the bill that we did, which, by the way, everybody calls this a stimulus bill. I don't think we were stimulating anything, quite frankly. I think we were saving the economy from a complete free fall. And I think people, if they recognize what Congress really did to really save the American economy a little bit so that we can open up and go back, I think it would make things a lot easier to talk about. In terms of predators, clearly there are going to be predators that we're going to have to look at. I'm already sent one letter to Bill Barr, or we're sending it to ask him to look at something going on in the cattle industry. If predators are taking this money, then we need to crack down on them. I'm glad the attorney generals, I think to some extent that's going to be their bailiwick. They've got the laws to do that already. There's probably enough federal laws. I don't know if it needs to be specifically addressed in the next package, but we'll certainly look at it because clearly we don't want to see that happening.
Who was that talking?
That was Doug Jones.
All right. Okay, thank you.
Other questions?
Yeah, hi, this is Amy Lavin from Inside Health Policy. Hi. I was curious, actually, a number of things. With the APTCs, I was wondering if you have any specifics on where you want to go, if you were talking about moving up to 600% or just removing the 400% threshold and lowering the contribution, or are you still in negotiations about that?
my belief is we're still in negotiation. I mean, the tax credits, obviously, you can dial them, as you pointed out, a variety of ways. And I think we're still, we didn't want to come in with a stalking horse. We wanted to say this is one of the dials we need to use if we're going to reopen the enrollment period, and people were also then suddenly in a period of time when they are cash strapped. So the tax credit tool is a good one to use, but we didn't have a specific dollar or percent.
Okay, great. Gotcha. And is that the same, presumably, for COBRA? Because I know there have been talks about 100% or 75%.
Yes. I mean, the thing what we're trying to recognize here is during this unprecedented time with people with no income on, thank goodness, the enhanced unemployment, and thank goodness on both the $600 a week and the fact that, like, in a state like mine, and more than 50% of our traditional workforce don't normally qualify for unemployment. So the fact that we finally took care of, 1099ers, freelancers, gig workers, that helps a lot. But if you, even with the enhanced unemployment and traditional unemployment, you still don't have your health care, we're looking at all these dials. You dial up the COBRA percent, you may not have as many people fall into the ACA bucket. You don't have the COBRA dialed up, you're going to have more on the ACA side, and I think this is where that's part of the negotiation.
Okay, that's great. Thank you so much. Can I ask one more very quick question? I apologize for taking up all the time, but I've been trying to find out if the people who are in short-term plans or healthcare sharing ministries whose coverage may not cover the testing and treatment, would they qualify for the hospital fund, the administration's hospital fund? And I'm curious if you guys have heard anything on that from the agencies.
I'll let Gina Doug answer. I have not, but to my mind, the challenge with what at least I think some of us have called these as junk plans, the just raw deal that these plans have presented, I think has been vividly clear as we've seen people who, at least in my state, who signed up for these junk plans, and then got literally thousands of dollars of billing for testing. Now, this was before the administration said there was going to be no testing payments, but I think the junk in these plans has been pretty demonstrated during this virus.
Let me just add to that, Mark. In conversations that I've had with people at Health and Human Services, and trying to persuade them that a better use of dollars is to open up for a special enrollment period for the Affordable Care Act, because we don't want to use those dollars that are in the hospital fund to be used for paying for the coronavirus care, and the junk plans aren't covering that generally. The answer to my question and concern was basically to not answer it, to express an unwillingness to do anything around a special enrollment period.
Thank you.
Hi, Zach Cohen from National Journal. Can you hear me all right?
Yes.
Yes.
Great. Thank you. Question for Senator Warner, but I suppose it could go to Senator Shaheen and Jones, too, for committees that you sit on. How do you feel about, especially in dealing with classified information, on virtual hearings or phone hearings? It sounds like Rules Chairman Blunt, Ranking Member Klobuchar, are working on that, and curious how that works with the subject material you're working on.
Well, on the Intelligence Committee side, it's virtually impossible. We've kind of broken our staff teams, and I want to give them a shout out for doing great work. Kind of a red team and a blue team, and it's not red and blue by partisan, but we have to have people in our SCIF during the week to work. The idea that you could somehow do that via Zoom call is just not practical. There may be ability on other committees to do that, but not in a meaningful way on the intel side.
And just to add to that, Doug and I are both on armed services, and we've had almost weekly briefings from through the Armed Services Committee, and anything that is classified information is not talked about on the phone for obvious reasons.
And quite frankly, this is Doug, even those that are not classified is incredibly time-consuming and awkward. I mean, to give an example, in our Armed Services Committee hearing that we're doing, each senator gets one question. Some may come, some may go. You know, I think we got a long way to go for committee hearings and things like that to really be effective. I'm becoming more and more reluctant to try to figure that out because I've just seen how it's operating. I do think there are things that we can do in both committee and on the floor. If we, you know, this time should be a time, quite frankly, where people should be working very hard to reach that common ground and consensus so that we can get things done by unanimous consent. I mean, I think we have the incentive right now during this crisis to try to work together on both sides of the aisle. And sometimes, and Gene and Mark will tell you, sometimes we got to pull people on within our caucus to try to come to some agreement where everybody has not got 100% of what they want. There are things in there that you don't particularly like, but for the better good of the country and our states, we come to an agreement about it. And I'm a little bit more reluctant about virtual hearings right now than I have been based on some experiences that I've seen lately.
Let's take one more question. I know everybody's kind of slammed today, but one more question.
I've got one more.
Could we make sure we get? Let me make sure we get everybody gets a chance. Is there somebody else that might want to ask? And no disrespect, but only, I know we had a bunch of folks on the line, and we've maybe not taken as many questions as we normally would. Anybody else got another question? If not, if you got one more, go ahead.
Yeah, I've got one more question. Pretty important question. Can you possibly address the issue so that we can explain to people about the jobs that would be created in healthcare by expanding Medicaid? I mean, the problem you got in Alabama and I assume other states is a political problem. They're not going to do it because of politics. That's why they didn't do it in the first place. But there was, you know, we talked about this when it first came up a few years ago. The number of jobs that would be created and the help to the economy from expanding Medicaid.
Well, let me take a first crack at that. Then I'm going to sign off and let Doug and Gene finish, but particularly Doug.
Yeah, you know, I've got to go, Mark, so I've got to get off.
Well, let me just take 1 minute because I think it would be relevant. We were a late expander on Medicaid, and, you know, it took some changes in our legislature, but it still changed while it was the legislature was still Republican-controlled. We signed up about 340,000 additional Virginians. I don't think there's virtually anybody in the legislature now that doesn't think it was absolutely the right thing to do. And privately, you know, having been a former governor, most of my Republican colleagues from the legislature said, should have done it years earlier. It has provided an enormous cushion. And it is also, as you said, in healthcare systems, I don't have a number of jobs, but our healthcare systems are more resilient today with this expansion than they would have been if they were dealing with COVID-19 without the expansion. But if that pitch and that question, if Doug Jones can't hit it out of the park, then he's not the guy I'm normally partnered with. So thank you all very much. And, Doug, I'll leave you to the rest of the call. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And thanks, Glenn, for that. Look, it's really simple. I mean, it is just a question of numbers. Number one, just let's take Alabama. If you add, let's just use the number 350,000 people to Medicaid roles, people that have insurance. Now, these are people that will get... they will, on occasion, go to the doctor or the hospital, and those are being treated for free. But they only go when they absolutely have to. They don't go for the routine medical care. They don't go to preventive care. They don't do those kind of things to keep them healthy, like people with a good health insurance plan can and should do. So when you add those kind of numbers, into that and have more people coming in for the routine health care that helps keep everybody healthy, then you're going to have the need for more health care professionals and all of the things that come with the healthcare industry that follow it. It would add close to $1 billion a year in federal dollars in Alabama. Anytime you put that in to an industry like that, you are going to grow. The second thing is, clearly we are seeing hospitals close in Alabama. Rural hospitals have been closing at alarming rates. We've lost about 8 or 9 in the last 7 or 8 years. Medicaid expansion is not the silver bullet that would absolutely keep them open, but it is probably the most significant factor that would keep them open. It would keep those jobs, people coming in. And if you expand Medicaid, then you also have both nurses, doctors, and all of the staff that they bring in that would come into those areas and be happy to work in those areas. They can't work in those areas now where so much of the population would be eligible for Medicaid, but they're not. They just can't see those people for free and survive. So it's a real simple numbers. I think, you know, David Bronner with the RSA did a study about this. UAB did a study in Alabama, particularly. I think it's either Kaiser or Pew or both did studies about the economic benefits. The numbers are just there, and they cannot be denied how many jobs it creates and the boon to the economy, particularly in those what I call the underserved and rural areas in this country that need it desperately. Because once you get good health care, the side benefit is not just the direct numbers that come in, but when you have good health care in an area, you get good schools, you get people that are willing to relocate jobs and businesses into that community, and you get people staying in those communities and not leaving. So it just is compounded. Health care is, I think, one of the most, and probably the most significant benefit for a community to have in their area. Everything else flows. Without good health care benefits that would come from Medicaid expansion, those communities are continue to see a drain. So with that, I think I'm the last man standing here. I want to thank everybody for joining us today. I really appreciate it. You can follow up with our comms teams if you have any further questions for either one of us. I want to thank Senator Warner staff for getting this arranged and helping us through the technical difficulties. Hope everyone has a great day and a safe and healthy day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all for joining us. If you emailed and asked for audio of the call prior to, and we will get that to you shortly.